ते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 11, The Symptoms of Living Entities, Text Number 1. I generally read the summary of the verse of the chapter, but it's quite long, so I think I'm going to wait and see if there's time at the end I'll read it. Otherwise, the verse is, the purport is long too, so there's a lot of reading to do. So I'll just do the verse first, see what happens. So, text number one, word meaning, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Buddha, in bondage, Muktaha, liberated, iti, thus, Vyakya, the explanation of the living entity. Actually, Vyakya just means explanation, but this is what's being explained, the living entity. Munataha, due to the modes of material nature, may, which are my potency, na, not, vastutaha, in reality, varnasya, of the modes of material nature, maya, my illusory energy, mulatvat, because of being the cause, na, not, may, of me, mokshaha, liberation, na, nor, bandhanam, bondage. He Bhagavan Uvacha, Badhani Mukta Iti Vyakya, Dunato Me Navasputa, Gunasya maya mulatvam Name moksha na bandhanam Devavavani vacha Badho mukta iti vyakya Gunato me navastuta Gunasya maya mulatvam Name moksha na bandhanam Devavan vacha Badho mukta iti vyakya Gunato me navastuta Gunasya maya mulatvam Name moksha na bandhanam
Sri
Bhagavan vacha Badho mukta iti vyakya Gunato me navastuta Gunasya maya mulatvam Name moksha na bandhanam Sri Bhagavan vacha Badho mukta iti vyakya Gunato me navastuta Gunasya maya mulatvam Name moksha na bandhanam Sri Bhagavan vacha Badho mukta iti vyakya Gunato me navastuta Gunasya maya mulatvam Name moksha na bandhanam Sri Bhagavan vacha Badho mukta iti vyakya Vrnatamena vastuta. Vrnasyamaya mulatvam. Namemokso nabandhanam. Shivadvam vacha. Bodhomutta iti vyakya. Vrnatamena vastuta. Vrnasyamaya mulatvam. Namemokso nabandhanam. Shivarvani vacha. Bodhomutta iti vyakya. Vrnatamena vastuta. Gunasyamaya mulatvam. Namemokso nabandhanam. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Uddhava, due to the influence of the material modes of nature, which are under my control, the living entity is sometimes designated as conditioned and sometimes as liberated. In fact, however, the soul is never really bound up or liberated. And since I am the supreme lord of Maya, which is the cause of the modes of nature, I am also never to be considered liberated or in bondage." Omagyanatimirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurunmilitamena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Since it's a long purport, I'll work my way through my comments. Now make sure you get this idea of what the translation is in your mind, because this is a difficult purport. I was thinking how the Bhagavatam, well, any piece of literature, they talk about narrative, and then there's dialogue, and then there's exposition, the different aspects of a body of a work, a writing. So the Bhagavatam also has that. It has narrative, which means stories, basically. In some places, there's a story being told. And in other places, there's exposition or explanation or philosophy, as we say. So we have pastimes and we have philosophy, in other words. So just like Bhagavad Gita, there's really not much narrative there. There's not much going on in the story. There's not much of a storyline. It's just a conversation between Krishna and Arjuna. So the same thing here, we have quite a few, how many chapters is it? 26 chapters, something like that, in the Uddhava Gita. It's very long. And not a lot of stories. It's mostly just philosophy, strict philosophy. So we're getting right into it now. This is really, there's a really philosophical section of the Bhagavatam. So this purport is also quite philosophical. It's hard, for me, I have a hard time following that. I read this purport 3 or 4 times. And sometimes I had a hard time following the line of thought. How the argument was being unfolded. I've come across this actually in my editing also of Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Sometimes, because they're such brilliant geniuses, they sometimes when they're laying something out, it's quite elaborate. And you have to remember what they said at the beginning. You kind of have to keep that thought in your mind so you can follow along with what's being said. And it's easy to get lost. You kind of forget. What was that point back there? Oh yeah, I kind of have to get that one before I get this one. So I kind of had that same problem trying to scrutinize, as Prabhupada said, which is scrutinizing and studying his books. So try to understand this closely, looking at this purport. So it's important to understand what's being said here in this translation. But the basic idea is the living entity is really not liberated or bound up, even though we use those words. Badha and Mukta. And the same thing goes for Krishna. Krishna says, Namemokso nabandhanam. I'm also not bound up or liberated. So we're going to get what the different arguments for why this is so. And some of the problems I faced, I couldn't figure out what was being said, had to do with what the verse is about, this point of the verse. So We'll see if we can, maybe you can help me out. So we'll dive into the purport here. This is about Srila Prabhupada's disciples. As I understand it, at least in this point in time, of course, those of you who are around remember that the Bhagavatam was written. The GBC or the BBT asked this group of devotees to complete the Bhagavatam for Srila Prabhupada. And of course, Prabhupada finished at the 13th chapter of the 10th canto. But they didn't begin with the 14th chapter. They didn't feel ready to dive into the 10th canto. So they did the 11th canto first. So first the 11th cantos came out. So they went as a team, basically these three devotees, Gopi Prabhupada, Puru, Ridhana Maharaj, and Juvia. So as I understand it, the way it worked generally was Gopi Prabhupada was the more experienced Sanskrit scholar, even though Ridhana Maharaj was also knew Sanskrit, but Gopi was more experienced. So he would do a lot of the direct Sanskrit translation, including the commentaries of the Acharyas. And the actual writing of the commentaries, I'm pretty sure, was generally at this point, was Ridhana Maharaj was actually writing the purports, and Javita Prabhu was the English editor. At least that's, I'm pretty sure that's how it worked, at least at this stage. Later on, towards the end, about halfway through the 10th canto, Gopi Prabhu was also writing most of the purports. Yeah. Yeah, so here's the verse again. As a fine personality of Godhead said, my dear Uddhava, due to the influence of the material modes of nature, which are under my control, the living entity is sometimes designated as conditioned and sometimes as liberated. Actually, this wording, I don't want to get into Javita's editing, but it's not that he's designated because of the influence of the modes of material nature. The modes of material nature, his relationship with the modes of material nature, you might say, give him that. I'm just parsing words here. Given that designation that we have. So in general talk, we say either he's liberated or he's conditioned. You say all about the jiva. I shouldn't interrupt myself there. I should just read through the translation. Okay. Let's go. Let's just start from the beginning to end of the translation here. My dear Uddhava, due to the influence of the material modes of nature, which are under my control, Krishna speaking, the living entity is sometimes designated as conditioned and sometimes as liberated. In fact, however, the soul is never really bound up and liberated. And since I am the supreme lord of Maya, which is the cause of the modes of nature, I am also never to be considered liberated or in bondage. Okay, so, pressing on here. In this chapter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna explains the different characteristics of conditioned and liberated life. The sentence by which one can recognize saintly persons and the various processes of devotional service to the Lord. So these three things are discussed in this chapter. Characteristics of conditioned and liberated life, the sentence of saintly persons, and the process of devotional service. Various processes of devotional service. In the previous chapter, Uddhava inquired from the Lord how conditioned and liberated life are possible. The Lord now replies that Uddhava's question is somewhat superficial. Since the pure spirit soul is never entangled in the material energy of the Lord. Now there's an important Sanskrit line, which I'm surprised wasn't quoted in this purport, Asangojayam Purusha, which means that the living entity is never actually entangled with Maya. He's always transcendental, which is the basic point that's being explained here. They don't act, just like oil and water don't mix. Certain substances, like if you put salt in water, it dissolves in the water. But the jiva doesn't dissolve into Maya. There's always the separation between the two. So Asangojayam Purusha means that the jiva is always a pure spirit soul, even when in contact with material energy. So here the way it's stated is never entangled in the material energy of the Lord. So continuing the purport, the living entity imagines a false conception with the three modes of nature. This false connection with the three modes of nature and accepts the material body as the self. The living entity therefore suffers the consequences of his own imagination, just as one suffers the illusory activities of the dream. So we're really not under the modes of nature, we just think we are. And that's where we're suffering. Just like you identify with a dream, in a dream, you think it's really happening. You can wake up sometimes completely shaking in your bed, and you're afraid because you think somebody's trying to kill you or something. That's what's going on. You're sleeping in a nice soft bed, but you think that you're being attacked by something. So it seems real, the experience seems very real, but it's not really happening. So this idea here, we're always separate from the modes of the material energy. They're two different energies and they're mixed together. So going on, this does not indicate this. So let's explain what this is, because I have to read the previous sentence again. The living entity therefore suffers the consequences of his own imagination, just as one suffers the illusory activities of a germ. This does not indicate that the material world is illusory in the sense that it is non-existent. The material world is certainly real, being the potency of the personality of Godhead, and the living entity being the superior potency of God is also real. Now this is an important distinction that is made by the Vaishnava Acharyas, because the impersonalist Mayavadis, they say this world is not even here at all. We're just imagining that it's here. But we say, no, it's actually here, it's because it's God's energy. And God's energy is real. Just as He is real, His energy is also real. So it's not that it's not here at all. Something is here, but we mistake it for something else. Okay, but the living entity's dream of being part and parcel of the material world is an illusion that drives him into the contradictory state called material conditioned life. Contradictory state. The living entity is never actually buddha or bound up, since he merely imagines a false connection with the material world. Alright, not bad so far. Because there is ultimately no permanent connection between the living entity and matter, there is no actual liberation. So we use that word mukti and moksha all over the place in our books. It appears all over the place in our books. But it says there is no actual liberation, which is what Krishna is saying here in the verse. The living entity being eternally transcendental to the inferior material energy of the world is eternally liberated. Lord Krishna reveals that in one sense, the living entity is factually not bound up and thus cannot be liberated. This little phrase here, in one sense, is a very handy one for us. We can use it for lots of different things. Well, oftentimes we can make some philosophical point and then we can say in one sense and then say just the opposite thing. And you can explain why. So in one sense, we're not actually bound up and thus cannot be liberated. How can we be liberated if we're not bound up? But in another sense, the terms bondage and liberation can be conveniently applied to indicate the particular situation of the individual soul who is the marginal potency of the Lord. Although the individual soul is never actually bound to matter, he suffers the reactions of material nature because of false identification, and thus the term buddha, or bound up, may be used to indicate the nature of the living entity's experience within the inferior energy of the world. So our experience is of buddha. He suffers the reactions of material nature. I thought that was an interesting phrase. I thought the next one was going to be his own acts. Suffers the reactions of his own activity. Anyway, they're being played out by the material energy is delivering those reactions to our actions. Okay, let's see. Bound up may be used to indicate the nature of the living entity's experience within the inferior energy of the world. Since buddha describes a false situation, freedom from such a false situation may also be described as moksha or liberation. So, you might think, what's the point of all this? Yes, so what? Okay, I'm not really a Maya, but I think I'm a Maya, so I don't really need to get out of Maya, I just need to get out of thinking I'm a Maya. Something like that. That's sort of what's being said here. Therefore, the terms bondage and liberation, did I skip around? No. Therefore, the terms bondage and liberation are acceptable if one understands that such terms only refer to temporary situations created by illusion and do not refer to the ultimate nature of the living entity. So just understand that we're always transcendental. Nityananam, Chaitanam, Chaitananam. We're made of the same stuff as Krishna. Satchitananda, we'll hear more about that as the purport goes along. And this world, and so we don't, we never change in that sense. Just like people think they talk about reincarnation, they say, you become, you know, as a person, you become this or that. We don't become anything. You're always who you are. And you change your clothes. Just like when you change from one suit of clothing to another, you don't become a different person. The judge puts on his robes, he doesn't become, in one sense he becomes, here again, in a sense, he becomes, but he doesn't actually become a different person. So the soul doesn't become anything else besides where it is. In this verse, Lord Krishna states, Gunasya Maya Mulatvam Namya Moksha Nibandhanam. The terms liberation and bondage can never be applied to the personality of Godhead, so now we're shifting to Krishna. We've been talking about the jiva, now we're talking about Krishna, because Krishna refers to himself also. He says, I'm also not liberated or bound. Okay, the terms liberation and bondage can never be applied to the personality of Godhead, since he is the absolute truth and the supreme controller of everything. Lord Krishna is eternally the supreme transcendental energy, entity, and he can never be bound by illusion. And of course, this is an important point for us, because also the Mahavati say that Brahman somehow or other becomes covered, or a portion of Brahman becomes covered and by avidya, and that becomes the jiva. So they have different ways they talk about it. Even this material world, if they don't say it's fault, and I'd say it's a covered portion of Brahman, but Krishna never becomes covered, especially the idea that you have to realize by meditation, you have to realize that you're God, you've just forgotten. So if you've forgotten, that means that Maya has covered you, but Maya can never cover God, because it's never Maya, it's Krishna's Maya, it's God's Maya, it's his energy. It can never become, and it's under his control. So continuing, it is the duty of the illusory potency of the personality of Godhead to attract the living entities to ignorance by creating the false impression of a blissful experience separate from Lord Krishna. So there was a brief mention of Krishna's position. So now we're back talking about the jiva again. So Maya's duty is to keep us thinking that we're in Maya. The illusory conception of existence apart from the personality of Godhead is called Maya, or material illusion. Bhavam dutiya vinideshitasya vishadapetasya viparyo smriti is the verse that defines how we're in, how we are in fear in this material world. Dutiya abhinideshita means absorbed in the conception of duality. That's our position. This word, incidentally, I came across it recently in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, abhinivesha, or abhinivesita, which means absorbed in. So we're absorbed in Maya, bhaya, we become absorbed in bhaya because of our, we're absorbed in duality and therefore we suffer fear. So in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the definition of nishta, you know, after Bhajana Kriya, which means sadhana, and say Bhajana Kriya, then there's an Artana Vritti, which is a cleansing of the heart, and then Nishta, which is usually translated as firm faith. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur actually defines Nishta as sadhana vinaveshita, which means absorption in sadhana. Full absorption in sadhana is the definition of Nishta. I thought that was interesting, because I always think of Nishta as firm faith, which is a way that it's usually, which is kind of interesting to me, because you would think that, at least I would think that, unless you're absorbed in your bhajan, then you're not going to get an Artha Vritti. Your heart is not going to be cleansed. But apparently you don't get completely cleansed, you don't get fully absorbed in sadhana until your heart is cleansed. But until you go through that Anantavritti stage, then you're really absorbed in sadhana. So in that sense, of course, we can understand that, yes, we're doing our sadhana, and we may even externally, you might say, be absorbed in it. We're doing it as we're supposed to do it, but our consciousness is not fully there yet. So when the heart is purified, then we're fully there. That's why I always like to make the point that even we come through the morning program every day, and there's so much opportunity for spiritual advancement here, because we're always trying to go deeper and deeper and deeper. The more our heart is cleansed, the deeper that we go. So anyway, now let's talk about absorption here. So let's go on. Since Lord Krishna is the supreme absolute controller of Maya, there is no possibility that Maya could have any influence over the personality of Godhead. Thus the term bandhanam, or bondage, cannot be applied to the eternal, blissful, and omniscient personality of Godhead. So obviously we would never think that God is bound. But the term moksha, liberation, indicating freedom from bandhanam, is equally irrelevant to the Lord. So we might say, well, God is, I was liberated. So here it's being said, well, there's no question of him being bound or liberated. He's above all of that. So now the rest of this part, we're about halfway through the purport, a little bit more. Now there are three paragraphs here. I think this is all Bhaktisiddhanta. It begins, but Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has commented on this verse as follows. Now it's not clear to me if all the rest of this is his, but I think it is. Kind of seems to be. So this is now remember what this verse is about. Everyone has it in their brains by now, I think. Now we'll see what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, and see if you can figure out the connection while he's saying this. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is endowed with great spiritual potencies. Because of mundane concoction, the conditioned soul imagines that the Absolute Truth is devoid of variegated spiritual potencies by which he may enjoy blissful life. So I'm thinking, what does this have to do with what we're talking about? We'll see. Maybe we'll try to see. Although the living unity is the spiritual potency of the world, he is presently situated in the inferior illusory potency, and by engaging in mental speculation, he becomes bound in conditioned life. Liberation means that the living unity should transfer himself to the spiritual potency of the Lord, which can be divided into three categories. Lavani, the potency of bliss. By the way, I have to pause here for a moment to explain that this is pronounced Lavani, not Ladini. These demons are all over the place in this guy, but there's hardly any demons, or enes. There's hardly any enes in the sense, but I think there's one verse in the 15th chapter that has an ene in it. But usually it's not ene. So it's not Ladini, it's La. And for us it seems contrary to as Dravida likes to say, we like to put the accent on the penultimate syllable. The penultimate means the next to the last syllable. But sometimes the accent falls on the first syllable, as it does in this case. Ra-dini. Ra-dini. And the last one is also Ra. So Ra-dini, the potency of bliss. Sindini, again, not dini. Sindini, the potency of eternal existence. And Sandit, the potency of omniscience. So whilst us, we can recognize that this is more or less another way of saying Sat-Chit-Ananda. Since the personality of God is eternally endowed with a pure existence of bliss and knowledge, he is never conditioned or liberated. The living entity, however, being entangled in the world's material potency, is sometimes conditioned and sometimes liberated. So it seems like maybe this was just basically an aside to explain about these three potencies of the Lord. I'm not exactly sure what they have to do. And that's the idea is that, well, Krishna's eternally enjoying through these three potencies. You know, he enjoys especially this Radhani Shakti, Srimati Radharani. So because that's his situation, he's situated in that, he never comes out of that position. He's always enjoying, so there's no question of him being bound up by Maya. Inferior energy, these are superior energies. The new natural original state of the three modes of nature is called Maya. Now remember that in this translation it says it's Maya that makes us think that we're conditioned or liberated. It puts us in that condition. So here you hear about Maya. When the three modes of material nature interact, one of them will become powerful, subordinating the other two modes until another mode becomes prominent. All right, we're getting too late here. I just want to mention one thing. This idea, how one mode or another becomes prominent, it's really baffling to me. I can't really figure out what it means exactly. And if you read Bhagavad Gita chapter 14, verse number 10, it says that sometimes the mode of goodness is prominent, overcoming the others, and sometimes the mode of passion overcomes the others, and so on. And then Prabhupada, his last sentence, it says, in this way there is always competition for supremacy. So I try to get a picture of this in my mind. Of course, we're talking about abstract things today. We're not talking about stones and houses, and we're talking about abstraction. So this idea, first of all, what exactly is a mode of material nature, and how are they competing for supremacy? You get this idea that it's three personalities battling together in a boxing ring, fighting it out with each other, and sometimes one is out and it's... What does it mean that they're competing, and how are they competing? One is one side, sometimes get the upper hand, and the other one. Are they just victims in all this? Is it like there's three puppeteers, each one pulling a string, and sometimes one pulls and harder than the other one? We're just innocent victims. We're off in the ocean, just floating around, bouncing up, and sometimes you get a low wave, and sometimes you get a high wave. What exactly is going on here? Something about hanging in the air, you can think about. So I have to go on here. Actually, one point I should make is that even though it seems like a lot of times we talk about it, that we're just completely helpless under the modes of nature. Sometimes we get a pull from the mode of goodness and we do something good, and sometimes we get a pull from the mode of passion, and so on. Sometimes we get a pull from the mode of ignorance and we just fall asleep or get intoxicated or something. But Krishna says that we can, according to our, we can associate, we can choose which mode of nature we associate with. And Prabhupada explains that we can cultivate the mode of goodness, and he's talking about the material mode of goodness, because later, the purport to 14:10, he says that no one can rise above the modes of nature completely, to Shuddha Sukha. So even though in one sense it seems like we don't have any freedom whatsoever, there are other indications that we do have some freedom. We can choose to associate with the mode of goodness. So in that sense, we're not just completely helpless and being beaten up by whoever's in chair, whoever's winning the fight at the moment. So I want to go on here. Oh, one more sentence. In this way, so I was talking about one subordinates the other. In this way, the three modes can be distinguished in their variety of manifestation. So this sentence may not strike your brain quite right, firstly. But in this way, the three can be distinguished in their variety of manifestation. So, to put that in a little simpler English, it means how they manifest themselves. They manifest themselves in different ways. That's the idea. The mode of goodness shows itself in a certain way. The mode of passion shows itself in a certain way. And so on. That's what this verse, that sentence is saying. The three can be distinguished in their variety of manifestation. Although the threefold material potency expands from the personality of Godhead, the Lord Himself in His personal form is the actual abode of the three spiritual potencies, namely eternality, bliss, and knowledge. If one desires to become free from the entanglement of conditioned life within the material sky, called the Kingdom of Maya, one must come to the spiritual sky, wherein the living entities are filled with bliss, possess eternal spiritual bodies, and engage in the loving devotional service of the Lord. I thought this was worded kind of interestingly. If you want to go out of this world, you have to go to that world. So it seems like they would say, if you want to go out of this world, you have to do something so you can go to that world. In case. By developing one's eternal spiritual form in the loving service of the Lord, one immediately transcends the duality of conditioned life and personal liberation, and can directly experience the spiritual potencies of the Lord. At that time, there is no possibility of false identification with the material world. So this is all Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's explanation of this verse. So let me just read through this. I'm already going on long here. There's one more paragraph. Realizing oneself to be the eternal spirit soul, the living entity can understand that he is never truly connected to matter because he is part of the superior energy of the world. Therefore, both material bondage and liberation are ultimately meaningless within the reality of the spiritual sky. I was just reading Jagat Dharma, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the liberated jivas in the spiritual world, they don't have any thought of the material world. They're not even aware that it exists. They're too absorbed in what they're doing with Krishna. The living entity is the marginal potency of the world and should exercise his free will to engage in the pure devotional service of the world. By reviving one's eternal spiritual body, one can understand oneself to be a minute particle of the spiritual potency of the world. The living entity is a minute particle of eternity, bliss, and omniscience. So here we get into the distraction. We're minute particles of eternity. You know, how do you have a piece of eternity, or a piece of bliss, or a piece of omniscience? We're a particle of it. And thus, in full Krishna consciousness, there is no possibility of it being carried away by the illusion of the three modes of nature. In conclusion, it may be stated that the individual living entity is never actually entangled in matter and is thus not liberated, although his illusory state may be accurately described as entangled and liberated. On the other hand, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally situated in his own spiritual potencies and can never be described as being bound up. And thus there is no meaning to the concept of the Lord's freeing himself from such a non-existent condition. So in one sense we are bound and liberated, but in no sense is Krishna bound and liberated. He's always beyond everything, situated in his own abode. So, let me read the translation one more time. This is not time to read the summary. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Uddhava, due to the influence of the material modes of nature, which are under my control, living entity is sometimes designated as conditioned and sometimes as liberated. In fact, however, the soul is never really bound up or liberated, and since I am the Supreme Lord of matter, which is the cause of the modes of nature, I also am never to be considered liberated or in bondage. What do we take from
Does Krishna ever make this point particularly about the living entity not being conditioned or liberated in the Bhagavad Gita?
Does he make that point in Bhagavad Gita? Well, indirectly, I would think all the different qualities of the living entity that are mentioned in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. But I was thinking one of them, Krishna says, is achintya. Living entity is inconceivable. So, actually, the definition of the inconceivable in Mahabharata is pratinya parinlachcha, that which is above prakriti is inconceivable. So in one sense, any philosophy is inconceivable. Because as soon as you're talking philosophy, you're talking metaphysics. So that's above prakriti, it's above the material nature. So, anyway, that's a little off the point, but go ahead.
He kind of makes a distinction of himself, saying he's beyond
yes.
everything. But the specific way of how he's stating to, mm-hmm. you know, in this verse, I was wondering if that aspect of that.
I don't think it's.
No, but that's about himself. Jiva.
That's about himself. Does he say that the jiva?
The jiva is the next line. Then vinyana,
the jiva is also not bound. Yeah. If he's engaged in service, basically, is the idea, right?
Yeah, but where is that?
Our pundits have given Yes.
I was somewhat confused, and I think we have a resolution.
Better than me, I'm completely confused.
For this notion that liberation is also a product of Maya.
Liberation is also
a product of Maya. This is how this verse is explaining it. But then you know, it raises the question, well, how is liberation under Maya? And so I was confused by that, but I have a solution. I want to see your opinion. So I think the word liberation or moksha here does not refer to moksha after death, where somebody goes to Brahman, but rather moksha in the body, jiva mukta. So there are people who have by yoga practice transcended the norms, but as we know, another for Vishnu Dhamra, they can fall down again because they did not worship him, as the famous verse. So the Mukta Manas, they think that they are liberated, but they are not actually. That is also a function of Maya, thinking that they are liberated in the body. I have to distinguish that from actual liberation. There are two kinds. One is Brahman, merging into Brahman, and the other is going to the spiritual world. So that, in that sense, the notion that I am liberated in this body, which some of the practitioners seem to get, is also a product of vidya instead of avidya, and that's why it's a product of Maya. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's purport seems to support this understanding, because he's saying, no, forget about both vidya and avidya, transfer yourself to labini, sun within sun within, transfer yourself to devotion, bhakti, and that is the only real way to become free from both the concept of moksha and Brahman, which is a product of Maya. Is that okay, you think? Or?
It's okay. I didn't see that at all in the purport. We're taking it to another level. My understanding was, we can't say we're liberated or conditioned because that has to do with, you know, some kind of entanglement with the material energy. Whereas the soul is never actually entangled with the material energy, never mixed in with the material energy. And the liberation, in a sense, is that we have been liberated from this idea that we have. As the beginning of the purport was talking about the dream. So we have to get that's what's causing our suffering. That's what it is, in a sense, our bondage, is that we're thinking that we're part of the material energy, that we have a deep connection to it. So liberation means getting rid of that conception.
Right, so the fact that liberation and moksha is referred to here as under Maya means that there is a concept, a conception of liberation that is also false. Thinking that you are liberated, but you are not actually liberated.
This first sentence, which is, it says, due to the influence of the modes of material nature, the living entity is sometimes designated as conditioned and sometimes as liberated.
So if you look at Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's book,
I didn't see that meant that liberation is a condition of Maya. What it means is, in relationship to Maya, there are two conditions. One is that you're in Maya, and one is that you're out of Maya. That's called the liberated state. That's the way I understood this verse, this translation. But it's hard to understand sometimes these things. Okay, you want to ask for them?
So, thank you for your class. I'm trying to get an understanding of this. So, if your consciousness identifies that you are in the mode of ignorance, and, you know, for example, like, I'm sleepy, I want to sleep a lot, or something like that, so you would have to have a thorough understanding of the modes of material nature to identify what world you're in, and then
there's really no reason to do that. We chant Hare Krishna, rise above the modes. And we live a way of life that's in the mode of goodness. It's a regulated life. Really, following regular principles is really accepting the mode of goodness. It's not, in one sense, it's not transcendental. It's not bhakti yoga exactly. I mean, it is, because it's under the order of the spiritual masters, you can see that. But it's not Shravanam, Kirtan, Vishnu, Smaranam, and so on. So we live a sattvic lifestyle, and we live also a shuddha sattvic lifestyle by chanting Hare Krishna, engaging in the process of devotional service. And we don't have to realize, I mean, we can say, oh, mood ignorance is coming on. If we see that and we don't want it to come on, then we can chant Hare Krishna, try to do something active, associate with a mood of goodness, or maybe even a mood of passion, get up and do something, walk around. But in general, it's not something that people necessarily prescribe, that we have to go through life analyzing which mood is acting on us at a particular moment. It's not part of our process.
Well, it says, because it seems like in the Bhaktivedanta magazine this month, they have that article in there.
Yeah.
And,
that's just a presentation of what Krishna's giving in Bhagavad Gita, and also in Bhagavad Gita, just a summary of it. That's for our understanding how the modes are, so we can recognize, it's good to be able to see. And just to understand, we want to be in goodness, even ordinary goodness, because it helps us to stick to our activities of the Bhakti Yoga. Stita Deva.
Ha ha ha.
And the doctors are going to fade it out of it.
No, that's a good question. It makes you think. So, I mean, I have a Jewish spirit, so if you actually agree with people, there's nothing to talk about. So.
But I think you're in an eternal position.
Yeah, I think you're, well, according, you know, when at my Hebrew school education, it is. But I think you actually said this, but, you know, you're looking at this verse, and the history, you deconstruct text is a discipline they put you through. The first verse, it says, give the influence of the modes, okay. Under the living entity is sometimes designated as conditioned or sometimes as liberal. So who are they referring to? The people who are sometimes designating it? They're under the modes, you know?
It's interesting. Well, the scriptures designate, for one thing.
The scriptures...
That's what I understand is what he said.
But I think he more or less addressed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, as well. I was just... The thought was in my head.
Hmm.
I
wasn't
wondering
that
the feeler and the feeling objects...
Maybe the feeling objects...
The feeling object?
Say, for example...
The person who's feeling.
Correct. But the feeler is a reality, though. We cannot deny the feeler is feeler's experience is illusion. That will not be proper. Then we are denying the existence of the soul.
No, right.
So okay, I just want to make sure. But the feeling object maybe. So when you say atyanta dukkha nivritti, maybe that is product of maya. But when you say mukti hita anuthavam swarupam devasa, that is not a product of maya. That is the Yoga Maya's product. But Atyanta Dukkha Nibriti could be directed to the product of Maya, in a sense. Because they do enter into that Brahman, not necessarily impersonal Brahman, what do you think? Because Mahabrahman is also like a big tree, Mahaprabhu told to Ramananda Rai. Sorry, Ramananda Rai replied to Mahaprabhu that in chapter 8, Madhulila, at the end, question answer, said that they enter into this Brahman where they remain atyanta dukkha nibriti. So that is product of mind.
You should translate that phrase because I'm sure not everyone understands what it means.
Means cessation of the material suffering.
Hmm.
So that means they don't suffer, they are entering into a big tree or rock. Prabhupada gave in the power that Buddhis enter into rock and Mahavati enters into.
You're talking about Prakriti here, that Mahabrahma.
Right. Yeah.
Not,
but that's
not also transcendental.
Correct. But that is also Brahman in one sense, according to Krishna. So they experience that liberated position in that sense. So that is product of Maya. But when we talk about mukti ritam mutarupam, the pure devotion.
Right, so you're making a distinction between these two kinds of mukti.
Correct.
Because it's a kind of mukti if you merge into the material energy, because that's also an energy. So you can merge into that energy, which is called Mahabrahma in Bhagavad Gita. But there's another Brahma, or Brahman, which is, we understand it as the Brahma Jyoti, or the Brahman that's everywhere, Sarvam Kalavidam Brahma, Krishna's spiritual energy. So there's a merging into that, which you're saying. And then, of course, even that is called Muktamananas. You go there, that's not the final destination either. You have to awaken your swarup, your actual relationship with Krishna. Otherwise, the jiva is never satisfied.
So these other parts. So the mirror, that's why sometimes the terminology is used vimukti. Of course, V can mean many different things, but one way of ignorance specificity. So this, the more specific mukti is to have your swarup, your eternal relationship with Krishna, right? To understand who you really are eternally as the eternal servant of Krishna. How you serve Krishna in the spiritual world, that's real liberation. So yeah, we can talk about different kinds of liberation. In one sense, just like also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's this idea that good and bad, to think good and bad in this material world, that's just a mistake, because there's no good and bad. But we think, well, there is good and bad. Lot of horrible things going on in this world. So there are different perspectives. So I think that's also what's playing into here, the different perspectives. That's why we say, in one sense, you can say, if you're talking on this level, you can say it this way, there is moksha and bandha. But on another level, there isn't really, because we're spiritual beings and we're not part of this world. And it's only in a dream state that we're thinking that we're part of this world. And the liberation is to get out of that conception. All right. Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
I know we're running out of time, but you raised the question about the modes and you didn't understand. So I wanted to relate something from the Sandarbhas. I just came across this a couple of days ago. The fact that the modes, Jiva Goswami is writing in the Paramatma Sandarbha, the modes go up and down. They're competing with each other. This is a point that's made to distinguish from what happens in the spiritual world or in Krishna Leela. So Jiva Goswami tackles an objection to Krishna as being the supreme, because in him also Sattvara Jatama are seem to be vying for supremacy. And the way that happens is that Krishna is fighting with the Asuras. And the Asuras, sometimes they win, and sometimes the Devas win, and this is all happening in Krishna's creation. So how can Krishna be transcendental? Mm-hmm. Because the Sattvara Jatama are seen to compete even in him, or in his creation, or under his supervision, and so on. So Jiva Goswami tackles this by saying, this cannot happen. This does not happen with Krishna. And his solution to this question problem is to say that Krishna gives his internal potency. I'm quoting from Jiva. His internal potency to the Asuras, because otherwise the Asuras have no chance of fighting.
His internal potency.
His own Swarup Shakti. Uh-huh. He gives a portion of it to the Asuras, so that they can actually fight him, otherwise they cannot fight him. Nobody can fight Krishna.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The Jivas cannot fight, there's no capacity to, Maya doesn't have any capacity. So he has to actually give a portion of his energy, internal energy, into this Asura, so they can actually fight with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he can enjoy the fighting rasa. And so all his actions are of Lavini. In the same way, in the Beta, sometimes he increases. So it is just his Lavini potency that's always increasing, which appears to manifest as if Rajaguna or Tamaguna is increasing. But Satvaguna is increasing in his Leela, but it doesn't. So this increase and decrease actually is a challenge to Krishna's internal potency in Krishna's pastimes, because sometimes he's seen, or his creation is seen to have him involved in situations where these things happen.
So the idea is that if you want to contact Krishna, you have to come into his realm, you might say. So he gives the potency for that soul to fight with him, to enter into his realm, because you can't from outside. There's no connection between the two, which is again a Sangha here in Purusha. There's no connection between Krishna's transcendental world and the material world. So, maybe we should stop now. Everyone's brain is exhausted. Sri the Prabhupada Ki Jai.